You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio. Today we're joined by Penny Melville Brown, a British Royal Navy veteran, blind baker and winner of the Holman Prize. Over the last 30 years, Penny has worked in the disability field, raising awareness and pushing for societal change. Today, we are going to focus on her work trying to better support those living with long-term, life-changing health conditions. And Penny joins us now. It is fantastic speaking with you again, Penny.
Thanks, Paulina.
Now, obviously, we will talk about your book. It's called It Could Be You. And something very interesting with your book is that you're not specifically just focusing on sight loss as someone who is blind, registered blind. You are looking at long-term, life-changing health conditions. So what do you mean by that?
Well, in terms of the law, you're talking about people who have got disabilities. But I found that the word disability, it has so much baggage around it that I really tried very hard not to talk about disabled people all the way through this book, because it was just awful. When one in four of the working age population, and probably more of people who are older, are disabled people, you've got more chance of getting one of these life-changing health conditions than winning the national lottery. I talked about people like us all the way through the book, because I want people to put aside this whole prejudice, this negative concept of disability, and think, actually, one in four, I look around a room, I look around my family, one in four of us, that is really people like us. So that's my whole concept.
And I think you used the shortened version of it as PLUs.
Yes, I do.
Which I love
it,
that.
It comes out differently on my screen reader.
Oh, how does it read it?
Yes, I can't remember now, plus that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yes, I have no sight at all. So all of this was written using my screen reading software.
And I know, I love, you mentioned actually this, and this is something I highlighted when I was going through your book, which is, and I'm going to quote you here. You said, "Gentle reader, it is far more likely that you will be affected by disability than ever winning the jackpot." And
yes,
such a wonderful sentence there, but also quite striking, because when you think about those numbers, yes, that is so true. And
yes,
I think it's also quite interesting because your book, you're talking about people that might have received a cancer diagnosis, people that might have long-term knee issues. It's not just, I guess, what we consider disability commonly. You're expanding this view to other people that have had those life-changing things happen to them later in their life.
Yes. For me, the health condition, yes, you lose your sight. Yes, you've got cancer, whatever. That is only part of the life-changing situation. And probably as important is the way that your whole perception of yourself, your life expectations, your confidence, all of that is rocked by acquiring this. Now, I acquired my sight impairment when I was in the Navy. And I can only talk about it from this point of view of somebody who's acquired a health condition in their later lives. If you look at young people who are born with a health condition or acquire it, you know, before they're 16, you're talking about not very many people. That's not to disregard them. There's one in 10 of them. But I don't have that perception of managing life from very early years with a health problem. So I'm talking about the vast majority of people with health conditions who have gained it after they're age 16. When they're trying to make their way in life, they've been hopefully successful, and then bang, life suddenly changes. And that health condition is only part of it because psychologically, what it does to you can be utterly devastating. You're running down two tracks here of coping with the basic health condition plus all the impact it has on your head.
And I think you do talk about this quite a lot in your book. It's the impact it can have on your mental health, and it
Yes.
is quite striking. And I guess it is something that's perhaps needs a little bit more support when it comes to what we offer here in the UK specifically.
Absolutely. And I know that there are some charities that will help you with the psychological impact, of life in general, but that will also include this sort of situation. But I think if you are facing this life change, you may not realize what it's doing to you. And nor, of course, may your friends, family, the people you work with, they will not necessarily understand. Your whole being has been rocked by this change. And therefore, you need to personally and with help if possible, but you need to take charge of the rest of your life. There's a Professor Clough who's written about this, and he talks about the four C's, where he's talking about control, challenge, commitment, and confidence. And I added another C, which is about courage, because if you want to battle back to life, you do need quite a lot of courage to cope with it. I was thinking about this earlier today. If you've got a life-changing health condition, you could be just at sea. And I'm here on the Hampshire coast near the Isle of Wight. And you could easily just be abandoned on the waves, bobbing up and down, going wherever the current takes you. And that's what it could be like in how you accept what other people do to you in life, whether it's your health treatment or any other treatment that you get. Or actually, you decide, phew, I'm only blind. I'm going to go to the Isle of Wight. How am I going to get there? Take control of it. Have a commitment. Accept the challenge. Be courageous. All those sorts of things. It's not just bobbing up and down, it's being brave. And that can be quite difficult when you're facing this awful health change. But if you just let it disappear, the rest of life disappear, and you just bob up and down, you're not going to be as happy, I think, as you could be.
No, it makes sense because you do talk a lot about this loss of this, I guess, sense of your identity, the identity you thought you had, and how it's
Yes.
uprooted by the sudden change, or maybe gradual change in some cases in your life, and trying to find ground again or trying to feel connected to the world again can be so difficult and disorientating, where you feel like the entire world is not really designed anymore for you, and you suddenly realize that, oh, things are a lot more difficult when you don't have your health or you don't have those things that you used to have in place that you took for granted.
Yes, all of that. One of the things when I've spent nearly 30 years working in the disability field and actually doing lots of training. And one of the things I realized very, very early on is that when people talk about disability, they get bogged down with things like accessible communications and lifts and ramps, environmental stuff. Those are important, but they are not the most important. The most important way of making people with health conditions happier and more successful is looking at attitudes. And that's the attitudes of the people around you. So that is family and friends. It is the people you work with, the people who give you education, the people who give you health treatment. What are their attitudes? How can you make them still see you as a fully functioning, coherent person, as you've always been? And the other side of it is the attitude of yourself. And if you become passive, bobbing around, not having drive and determination and vision, then you're not going to do as well either. So for me, how getting the right mindset is absolutely crucial to handling the onset of a major life-changing health condition. I remember I was at a very prestigious eye hospital, and I really made it an effort to know my treatment, understand it, take notes, be a partner in my treatment, not just a passive person. And gosh, it was lucky I did, because some trainee ophthalmologist was trying to significantly change my medication. Thankfully, they had a system in place that stopped it, but also I knew that he was wrong. If I had just not had the system to protect me, but also if I hadn't understood that he was wrong, I could have been dead. And it's that sort of thing. So one of the things I recommend, if you're coping with treatment, keep a chronology. Know what's happening. Keep a record that you can go back to and say, yeah, this happened then, that happened there, so that you are in charge of it. You are the most important person in all of this. You are not just a passive person. And actually, by keeping my records, I was really lucky because I was in the Royal Navy, and it made a lot of difference to my future and the pension I got and all the rest of it. So that was another benefit of taking charge, being in control.
It's so interesting you mentioned that because I do feel so often when you're faced with medical jargon and unexpected medical assessments and diagnoses, you get a bit lost in what's happening. And often, with doctors not having a lot of time, it does feel like you're not really giving enough information to make decisions about your own health, and you're just expected to trust the doctors to make them for you, but you're not part of that conversation.
But that's part of their attitudes as well. So if they do not see you as an equal partner and an equal player in that relationship, then you are already on the back foot. So you have to establish yourself as an equal partner, an equal player. It doesn't mean being aggressive or cross or anything like that, but you need to make the effort to find out yourself. And there's lots of charities, lots of information where you can go and find out something about your condition, what the treatments are. You can look up things on NICE and places like that. Don't be passive is really what I'm trying to say.
In your book, you also talk quite a bit about being able to stay in work. Why
Yes.
was this important for you to cover?
Well, I lost my sight. I must have been, oh, about 40-ish, and I'd had a hugely successful career. I'd even been trotting around the Portsmouth Naval Base in uniform with a white cane, which was wholly exceptional. And what the Navy did for me was prove to me, just because I couldn't see, didn't mean I couldn't do a really good job. I got promoted. I changed things for about 37,000 people in those days. And I knew I could do a good job. It was very difficult as I left the Navy, I was medically discharged, knowing what I could do for the rest of my life. I had 30, 40 years to go to be happy and fulfilled. It was very difficult. Charities weren't very helpful in those days. And so I decided I would dedicate the rest of my life to helping other people with disabilities to be self-fulfilled. Now, often, we ask, what do you do? Well, that could be paid work. It could be self-employment. It could be voluntary work. It could be helping your community. It could be doing all sorts of things. It could be bringing up your family, whatever. But you need to have that vision of yourself, I think. And this is me. I am not sitting at home watching the telly. Or actually, we don't watch the telly, do we? Or listening to the radio or whatever. I am, you know what I mean. I have something to give to this world. that gives me dignity, self-respect, fulfillment, happiness. And for many people, that's through work. And for people with life-changing health conditions, people like us, there is usually, often, no reason why you can't do that. And I have helped people to get jobs, to keep their jobs, but also to start their own businesses and become self-employed. Because more disabled people who work are self-employed and running their own businesses than other working people. It's a major way of us getting that self-fulfillment. There is help out there, and you can find it. But we need also to think about employers. People, I think, are terrified of the prospect of a life-changing health condition, of a disability. They don't know how to cope with somebody in their midst, one of their work colleagues. Often they're trying to be kind, but they see the problems, not the benefits. This is going back to attitudes again. How do you change those people's attitudes? I'm still the same person. I'm still as good as I always used to be. I might need a bit of help. I might need some adaptive software on my computer, but I can still do exactly the same. So it's all about your own attitudes to your future and moulding the attitudes of other people. And if you're feeling weak and you're bobbing around on those waves like a piece of flotsam and jetsam, you're not going to be very convincing. Getting your own head right, your own positivity, your own confidence is one way of changing your prospects for the future.
What would you say are the biggest challenges you're still seeing? What do you think, I guess, policymakers, decision makers really need to look into and change?
I think they need to change the language. They need to understand, if you've got 1 in 4 of the working age population is a disabled person, of them, about half will be working, and many of them will be underemployed. So they are working, but not necessarily to their full potential. Then you've got a whole bag full of carers who may or may not be able to work. So you're suddenly starting to see that health conditions are affecting potentially about a third of the working age population. That's a very major issue for any economy. Yes, some people might need benefits, and some people might need benefits in the short term while they re-establish themselves. But we need an economy that is about empowerment, fulfillment, not where people are castigating us for being benefit scroungers and things like that. Because if we don't have the opportunities, and that is not just from policymakers, benefits people, but also from employers, how are we going to get through that when we are often so utterly disempowered, partly by the system, but partly because nobody's actually addressing our own personal ability to take charge of our lives?
And I think it's all too easy to maybe start looking at reforming benefits or support without actually addressing the main challenge that is in the way of people being able to, stay in work or give back to the communities or to just have a fulfilling life.
Yes, just think of it as in a completely different way. Supposing, I'm making this up. I'm not saying it's a brilliantly well-costed policy. I'm just making it up. Suppose you said to every employer, you do not have to pay any employer national insurance for every disabled person you employ. Do you think that would change their behavior?
I mean, certainly, because I feel
Yeah.
like companies are so money cost driven,
Yeah.
it would be a big
Yeah.
incentive.
Yeah. And we as a government will help you, helping you with the adaptive equipment, giving you the expert advice that you need to keep that person who you've probably had in your employment for 20 years. They've got lots of skills and experience that you want to keep, don't want to all the cost of recruiting somebody new, of training them. We're going to make it cheaper for you to keep them, and we're going to help you do it. It sounds like a win-win, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Now, that's a not costed, not thought through, haven't gone through all the policy wonks to check that that sort of thing would work. But I'm just trying to say that something that is radically different could be successful. But who is asking us, the people like us, about our ideas, something that might work? Not many people have written to me and said, Penny, what do you think?
And I think that's the problem when you're making decisions at this level that impact lives of so many people without them involved in that conversation. You're
Exactly.
not going to
And does
have the
that
best
go straight
solutions.
back to attitudes? And we were talking about doctors making decisions on our behalf. And can you see that policymakers, employers, even families and friends can make decisions on our behalf? And what we need to do is reassert ourselves as people with control of their lives. Commitment, challenge, confidence, courage.
Well, Penny, I feel like on that wonderful note, I think we should direct our listener to your book. So it's called It Could Be You. Where can we find it?
Well, I regret to say I do not have an audio version of it. It is available on Amazon and the print is quite large. I think it's at least 14 point, but it's also available on Kindle. That's the best I can do, I'm afraid.
Now, Penny, if we wanted to follow what you're up to, I know you have a website, you're also on social media.
Yep, I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn. And I have a website which is www.pennymelvillebrown.com. Could you hear me try to remember that? But I blog on that all the time, and there's information about my work in the disability field. There's information about my round the world baking prize winning tour, blah, blah. And there's information about me. But also, I do lots of public speaking. If you've got a group, I'm very happy to chat to you on Zoom or if you're local, in person. I'm not trying to pretend I have all the answers, but I think I have quite a few that might be stimulating for other people.
Well, on that note, Penny Melville Brown, thank you so much for speaking on the Happy Hour today.
Thank you, Paulina.
For more interviews, features, and shows, go to your favorite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.